When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
I was like, what is with this soft-spoken dude? And the
What's
sweater.
With this nice man being nice to kids? Weird.
With the sweater and the slipper. I was watching Fraggle Rock. That's what I was.
Yeah. Okay. This is very. Yep. This everything makes sense. Yep. That tracks.
I loved Fraggle Rock. Okay.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I want to welcome back my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Because she left us last week.
And the reason I left was because my husband was gone on business, but I don't like advertising that while he's gone on business.
Well,
but he
obviously.
Was.
Yeah, I was like,
he's in California.
She's having some childcare challenges or something.
I mean, I was technically. Yeah. We were having childcare. I had to get one kid to work by 8 a.m., which means leaving by 7:15. There ain't no way that we were going to be able to
record
make a podcast
in the morning.
Happen.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But it
happen.
Was because my wonderful husband was across the country in California on business, but he's home now.
And all is right in the world.
That's right. All is right in the world.
This weekend was actually kind of like we were just talking about. It was kind of a slow news weekend. It was a lot of like random little things.
And I was listening to a podcast yesterday, a newsy type of podcast. And he goes, oh, man, it's packed. There's so much news. Everything happened this weekend. There was this. I'm like, you are lying. You're lying because you need to fill an hour worth of a podcast and you want people to listen. But nothing like earth shattering really happened.
Well, I would say definitely this weekend. It wasn't like or because we record on Thursday. On Thursday, we didn't even really talk about much news with Amanda because we were just kind of like recapping Trump's foreign policy. But even with those extra 2-3 days, there just wasn't like some giant stuff going on. Of course, which we will discuss a little bit today, there was the shakeup with the security team with Mike Walls. Some say pushed out. J.D. Vance says promoted. I don't know.
We'll see about that.
What else are we talking about today? We're going to talk a little bit about something that I feel like nobody is talking about, which is some signs of the tariff war between the U.S. and China. There seems to be some signs of de-escalation, which the mainstream media is not bringing up. Like,
and they're not
at
going
all.
To.
Which, by the way,
would
they
be favorable for Trump, so they definitely won't talk about it.
I mean, what's her face just sat down with him with Meet the Press?
Didn't Kristen even say
Walker.
One
I forget
of
her last name.
Yeah,
didn't even bring it up at all.
Nope. Like, of course not.
And then Trump,
but did make sure to ask if he was going to run again in 2028 because Democrats can't really
take
pick
a joke
up on nuance.
Yeah. Or anything. We're also going to talk a little bit about NPR getting defunded, which I'm sure.
Bye.
Bye. So, and of course, today we have earmarks. But before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Please hit that follow button so you don't miss the next episode. Also, if you don't want to be listening to us with ads, if you want bonus content, we also have an unfiltered episode coming up this weekend. And if you like to get those are exclusive to listening supporters. So listening supporters, paying supporters. All of you guys are listening supporters. There is a link in the show notes. Make sure you hit that and consider supporting us. So I'm going to go ahead. Let's get into this.
All right.
Oh, there is a fly that is harassing me right now. And I'm so distracted. I cannot.
It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch.
I know. Like nobody can see me on the video. I'm like flailing around here trying to get rid of this freaking fly. Okay, let's talk about China. As I mentioned, this weekend, Trump sat down with, he's actually done quite a few interviews. He did the one with The Atlantic. He did the ABC one with, I can't even remember the dude's name. Nobody knows who this guy is.
No.
It wasn't George Stephanopoulos.
And he took him to task, too. He was like
that
I'd be nice to you. Who are you?
That was a contentious one. And then over the weekend with Kristen Welker with Meet the Press. Okay. She was one of the moderators at one of the debates. And the reason I bring that up is that there's a lot of like little annoying news that came out of those interviews with the president, who probably has some kind of knowledge about what is going off. I'm just going to speculate that the president may have some knowledge about developments with the trade, air quote, war with China.
Yeah.
Now, she did bring up or try to bring up claims of this is where the whole like baby doll debate happened.
Yes. Which was, we got to lose that line of
argumentation. I kind of get what he's trying to say.
We can get what he's trying to say, but if people lose it. Inadvisable.
Yeah.
Actually, you don't want that to be your talking point. That's, Sally only gets two dolls this year. You don't want that to stick in people's minds.
And I don't even necessarily think it's like you only get two dolls this year. I think it's more like your selection is higher quality, but less of is kind of that.
That's not what people are going to hear.
But anyways, she brought up that topic. But what she did not bring up was some recent developments or things that appear to be happening in China. So over the weekend, I discovered a new outlet, which I was actually, I don't know. Have you ever heard of Radio Free Asia before?
No, I have not.
Me neither. So Radio Free Asia, by some weird form of the algorithm, shows up with a story on my feed. And also Economic Times picked it up. And it was a video and a news report that factory workers are protesting out now. Protesting in China is not protesting in the United States.
I was going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So protesting in China is more like upset, walking out, not working. It's not rallies. It's not signs. It's not disruption. It's just kind of like, it's not U.S. protests. It's basically you're not paying us or we don't have enough work. And they are walking out of some of the factories. So, for example, there was an electronic company that had a bunch of workers who decided to strike because of underpaid wages due to the factory closures that are linked to Trump tariffs. Mm-hmm. And this was specifically being reported by Radio Free Asia, which is a U.S. funded before, because my first concern was, is this some kind of like quasi Chinese propaganda, like Russia Today, but for China,
exactly,
something like that. So they're actually a U.S. funded nonprofit news outlet that focuses on China. And they're often covering like the human rights violations, government censorship, and they are critical of China's regime. So that made me feel, I was like, okay, all right, let me listen to it. I actually spent like a good chunk of time like going, because they were sharing things and I'm like going through their feed, translating, because it was all in Chinese, Mandarin, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were all, I was like using the Google Translate, trying to figure out what is going
what
on.
They were saying. Yeah.
With these videos and with these posts. And so it's looking, and that's one of the things that I discussed with Amanda on Thursday's episode was the challenge and the stability of the Chinese government. Like, how, because it's just really challenging to know what is going on over there because I don't know, it's a dictatorial.
When you don't know what media is run,
I don't
by
trust
who.
Them. Who's saying what and what's being considered now?
Right.
So it's looking like they're having some signs of unrest and unhappy people. And apparently, the speculation that I was talking about with Amanda was that China, like Xi, is not in the position of power that most people would think he's in because of his age and stuff like that, that there are people like nipping at his feet to gain power. This trade war for him politically is not beneficial. And just to show some signs, apparently China has recently exempted agricultural goods from tariffs, not all of them, though, not because they did a big pork and soybean order. So recently, there was also a report from Reuters that China exempted like $40 billion from U.S. like from tariffs from U.S. imports. Mm-hmm. Things like ethane, I believe some semiconductors, like different types of technology, they're exempt from tariffs. And they have been contacting businesses directly to tell them, hey, we aren't charging tariffs on your products. So if you want to please send things. Please.
And apparently these exemptions, they cover about a quarter of the U.S. exports. That is substantial.
It is substantial, especially considering everything that's been going on and especially considering where the narrative is right now. Now, I'm not going to say.
So why has no one picked that up? Why is no one talking about
that? Well, that's my thing.
A large amount of exemptions.
I don't understand. Now, of course, China, because what they are focusing on is that China is still trying to posture themselves as in being in a position of power, of not being willing to kneel to the United States. I mean, they've put out a bunch of propaganda videos recently calling the United States bullies and everything like that. But the fact is that they are starting to kind of pull back on some of the tariffs that most of the media is not reporting. Or if they do report it, they'll maybe do a publication on it, but they don't cover it on the actual news, not the actual news, but like on video and on their segments, like the stuff that people actually watch with their eyeballs, because that's what they have time for. Like, they're not covering it on there. What they are focusing on, though, is this debate about whether or not Trump has actually spoken to Xi. Because, again, while China is trying to put themselves in a position of not kneeling to the bully, the United States, they're saying, we haven't spoken to anybody. We're not negotiating with the United States unless they remove their tariffs first, and then we'll negotiate with them. That's kind of like the public image of it,
of course.
And Trump saying, yeah, I have spoken with him. I don't know, though, what is I spoke with China or I spoke with Xi, because the media is really, really trying to get to the nitty-gritty of, did you get on the phone and go, yo, what's up with these tariffs, while speaking to Xi directly?
Or did you like send him a DM
with someone and send a message? Like, how are these communications going on? And so that's kind of like the bigger debate that the media has been focused on. But they're like completely unwilling to look at the signs of what is happening. And that's not falling apart, but not going well.
I guess when I think about it, too, like setting aside the whole tariff debacle and what's happening with that and what we think about it, like when you set aside all of that and you look clearly at the legacy media, I know we're always harping on the media, but it's for a purpose because it really does matter this much. When you see that they are really, they're hyper fixated on like fringe stories that are like embedded in bigger stories, and they're so dedicated to a narrative, when you see that, you can't unsee that. Like, you're not, they're not actually doing the job of reporting factual information and allowing the American public to think about it and make their own decisions. They're all about crafting a narrative in service of their political leanings or ambitions or relationships and networking. And when you see it, you can't unsee it. It is negligence, in my opinion. Why wouldn't you? Why do we not know that China is loosening the grip on this whole tariff
and
discussion?
That it's showing signs of de-escalation between of course the
they don't
States
want
China.
Anybody in America to know that. They want America in a constant state of panic and anxiety and fear about this administration. So anything that could ease that or make you feel confident or slightly encouraged about the direction that things are headed, they're not going to do that. And instead, they're going to push, like, he's running in 2028. There's complete turmoil between all of his cabinet members. Elon Musk is going to be the next president. I mean, think about it. They've gone from one narrative to the next, to the next, to the next since in the last 100 days. And when you see it and you see what they're doing and how they're crafting these narratives, each week there seems to be a new one.
Oh, for sure.
It makes me more and more frustrated all the time, because you're not. Why do you think that there's new media seats? in the White House press briefing room? Because there has to be, because you people are doing your job. You're literally just writing like novellas about each week at the White House. It's I don't know. It's so obvious, but also super annoying.
And it's also interesting that you point that out, because there's this big concern, and I think rightfully, where small businesses or any business is kind of frustrated with the current situation, specifically with the tariffs and how mm-hmm. because when you're running a business, you have to plan ahead. You have to anticipate how much it's going to cost to import X for Christmas or whatever. Like, you're always planning ahead. And I was watching the All In podcast yesterday, I think, or I was listening to it yesterday while I was working out. And they were having a debate over tariffs. And on the panel, you had different perspectives. You had people that were supportive of tariffs. You had people who were defending them and people who were against them. But within this debate, one of the things that was brought up was the issue of the media and how also the media doesn't help businesses be able to plan ahead because they're not reporting vital information. And instead, they're focused on Trump saying that little girls can only have two dolls for Christmas or something like that.
Actually doing a disservice to the American people who are reliant on these headlines to make plans. They don't have, I mean, these people are running their own small businesses. They don't necessarily have time to wade through all of the different media outlets to get down to the nitty gritty of what's actually happening in these trade wars. And so instead of saying, hey, small businesses, there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Let's seize this opportunity to be optimistic. And maybe this is the signs for what's going to happen in the near future. No, they're going to be like, everything is doomed.
Well, and
you may
I think,
only have
counter,
one doll this Christmas. That's kind of like,
I think the counter argument to that is that the administration really needs to get their messaging together on this sort of
correct.
Stuff.
I mean,
too.
They should really be pounding this. Look, this is they're capitulating. We've got them.
But
or
the other thing
like
is, and then specifically when I was listening to the podcast, one of the things I can't remember the entire context of it. He said something like PPEs were going to be exempt or there was going to be some kind of big tax credit on them for business. I can't remember. So don't quote me on that. But the thing is that regardless of it, he was talking about how his wife and the business that his wife is in would make a huge effect on that business. Once they found out by chance about this development, they were I think it's something that might be in the Big Beautiful Bill, something they were hoping for and planning for. And he got upset because, first of all, yes, it's a failure on the administration to not have appropriate messaging about this. But also, like, I'm reading specialized business publications and mainstream publications, and it was not reported on. It's not something that's really come up. And so that's
kind of insane if you think about it.
And that's where he's pointing out the failure of the media. Not to mention that just last week, Treasury Secretary Bessent spoke at an event that was a closed door event. And at that event, he made a statement of this is not sustainable. And immediately the media ran with it as him allegedly criticizing the White House's policy and saying that it wasn't sustainable for the United States. When now, obviously, I wasn't there. I can't tell you who's telling the truth. But what Bessent explained was what I was saying is that this is not sustainable for China.
Oh, and but they won't. That doesn't matter. They're not going to.
Why would that matter? And there's nothing. So what's interesting about this, and I'm only putting this out there because, as Rachel pointed out, we criticize the media. It's literally like we have merch on criticizing the media. By the way, check out our merch. But I kind of wanted to put this on everybody's radar because I know that the tariff situation is something that brings a lot of people anxiety because we feel very unsettled with not knowing exactly where this is going to go. And so I can't tell you definitively which way it's going to go. But I can tell you what the media is not telling you about the story. And so I thought it was like really important to kind of bring that up. Speaking of the media, let's bring up two of our favorites, which is NPR and PBS.
Yeah. Oh, they're the best.
So there's been a lot of talk about and debate about whether or not NPR and PBS should be defunded. And in fact, there's been hearings, I think congressional hearings, where we've gotten some amazing clips, especially from the head of NPR, about the bias in these two basically state-funded organizations.
Yes.
Can you give us a little bit of feedback on, do you have some historical knowledge on how NPR and PBS came around?
I mean, I do somewhere in my brain, but I can't access it right now. I was just so like, early. But I like, no, I mean, not off the top of my head. I probably should. But the point to me, I'll just say it right off the bat, like the government should not be funding any media source. I don't know why.
I don't get
this
it.
This is even controversial. I don't care if it's a Republican administration or a Democrat administration. Why the government should be spending money on any of this is beyond me. And I think that there could be an argument maybe 30 years ago that it was a public good that there were these outlets like an NPR that brought some sort of culture to like public access that was free to communities when it came to like music and the arts and whatnot. But that we are in 2025 and you have all of the same things that NPR can offer you at your fingertips every single day with a little tiny computer that you carry around in your back pocket. We do not need to be funding these programs. And honestly, like I kind of say about when it comes to schools, like if it is a public good and the public is very much invested in it and is benefiting from it, then allow the public to pay for it. I don't think that the government should be funding it.
No, and I mean,
they are.
I don't. So to give you a little bit of background on NPR and PBS, they were both founded or signed into law by Lyndon B. Johnson. I'm not surprised.
Okay. There you go.
There's your answer. NPR was founded in 1970 and then public broadcasting. And the goal was to provide a non-commercial free radio network and also television broadcasting program for education, culture, public affairs, news, that sort of thing.
Like to you offer something free to the public.
Because remember also at the time, there's also this claim of it was about creating an like more variety or competition. Because at the time we had what? CBS, NBC, and ABC. Like there was like three major networks.
The big three.
And then so they were like, let's throw in one more and also public broadcasting. Now, a lot of people have some what I found hilarious, about this specifically. So Trump signs the executive order.
Yeah.
Cuts people $535 million. That is 15 to 16% of their budgets of both NPR and PBS, right?
So they still have large budgets.
Look, it's just funny because like you see, I grew up, I remember the fundraising
NPR still does it every year. PBS does it every year. When I listen to NPR, it feels it's kind of like when you go to Wikipedia. They're always asking for funds. They're always asking for money from you. If you benefit from this and you want to keep it going, you must give money or else we'll be closed tomorrow. And NPR is always doing that. PBS is doing that. They have their pledge drives every year.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
And I just think it's funny because, of course, this weekend, the heads of NPR and PBS go to Face the Nation to make their case about the horrible administration and how they're taking away the funds for what is very important for the poor children to be educated and informed, like Sesame Street.
Is it? The president tweeted or socialed or truthed, Republicans must defund and totally disassociate themselves from NPR and PBS, the radical left monsters that so badly hurt our country. I have to tell you, I heard monsters and I thought of Cookie Monster. I thought
I did too,
Sesame
actually.
Street, and I thought of that children's programming. Right. That is in many, many ways what people think of when they think of PBS.
Absolutely.
Is that impacted too?
Absolutely. And out of this executive order, we believe it impacts our funding out of the Department of Education, which is a 30-year program that has supported the not only the creation of many of the children's programming that you see on public television, but also the research that we do to ensure that that programming is not just safe and enjoyable, but that children, after watching, come away with understanding of basic letters and numbers. Half the kids in this country are not enrolled in formal pre-K. That's why programming for children on public television was created. That was the idea with Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, and everything that's followed since is to make sure that children that do not have access to a full array of resources have the opportunity to learn and to develop skills that they'll need the first time they enter preschool. That may be at age 2 or 3 or 4 and sometimes 5, not until they start kindergarten. That's what's at risk.
Are they? I mean, okay, fine, then use the rest of your budget and keep Sesame Street on for the poor children. Like, you have lots and lots of money. And if you, again, want to be able to continue, you should tell your audience, we no longer have funding. Let's raise some more money. And if it is a net good for communities all over the country, like you're saying it is, and it's vital, it provides a service to children
the
that they cannot get
else.
The market will feed it. That's absolutely true. I was listening to a podcast. I don't remember what I said this on. I think maybe been on an episode of the Dawn Dispatch. But I was in the car the other day, and it was just so perfectly timed. I was listening to a podcast with my girls that we've listened to probably since we moved here. So 6 or 7 years. And it's a sweet little podcast and it's fun. And it's a little competition between kids about two topics. It's just fun. The kids always liked it. And they introduced the kid who would be like moderating, because they always bring out a child to moderate. And within 30 seconds, this all happened. I'm listening to it with my 10-year-old, my 14-year-old in the car. And they said, we're introducing Roxy, or whatever the kid's name was. They like to go by they, them pronouns, and they're 11 or something like that. And then that happened, and they're like, okay, we'll be back with Roxy to do blah, 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 blah in a few minutes. And then they cut to commercial, and it's the podcast host, and she, in her most like sad sounding voice, is like, we all know the threat to free speech is under attack under the Trump administration. And that means that this podcast could be on the chopping block. And I was like, see, bingo, this is it. This is exactly perfect.
And this is NPR.
It's a publicly. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
I don't want to blast the name of it.
Yeah.
There's no need. And I just went, yep, that's it. It's so perfect. I mean, I know I'm taking a chance when I listen to any of those types of podcasts, but this one had been reliably safe for so long. And even it crossed the Rubicon where it's like, this 11-year-old goes by they, them pronouns. Also, the Trump administration is horrible and they're taking away our free speech. Please give us money. And I thought, that's the way to go. You know what? Yes. Our president and this administration have decided that they are not going to send taxpayer dollars for that. That is not a public good that the administration needs to be funding. And if the public really desires for it to stick around, they should fund it.
There was a Newsbusters Media Research Center article done back October of 2023. And they did a study, or I don't remember if they did the study or they were reporting on the study. But the point being is that the PBS NewsHour gives 90% of its time to leftist issues and specifically focus on LGBT issues. Yeah. So then also there was this report, or remember, I forget, it's Yuri Berliner, but he was the editor for 25 years or something like that with NPR.
Oh, yeah. And then he went and he did that whole article with the Free Press.
He did a whole. Now, this is he was basically a whistleblower where
he's not a conservative
at all,
not pro-Trump. And he was like, that's a hotbed for progressive liberalism. And there are no conservatives in there. They will not even talk about their bias.
And all he tried to bring it to their attention. And ultimately,
they were like, bye.
Exactly. Now, that became a really big deal because the head of NPR, who, if you guys are familiar with her, you've probably seen her. She was kind of like the, she has blonde hair. You've seen her. If you guys have been following the story, you guys have seen her. She has been, she's very progressive. She's had to delete tweets about calling Trump a racist. She was interrogated, essentially, on the Hill, where she was like, oh, that's not what I meant. I've changed my opinion since
then. She finally cracked and was like, yeah, maybe we should look into the fact that there's not one conservative who works.
Yeah, because that was the issue. That was one of the things they brought up, because even she was the one. So she came on brand new with NPR, and she was the one that Yuri brought this issue to. And basically, like, they didn't fire him per se, but like, it was,
they would make him working there miserable.
Exactly. So he ended up leaving. He's now with the Free Press. Like, he does stuff with the Free Press now. But this is a man that was with the organization for two decades. Okay. And right now the narrative is, you have NPR going on Face the Nation and they're like, oh, the children. But what they don't tell you is the extent of the bias and how rampant it is within these two organizations, and that taxpayers are paying for it.
You all remember when Sesame Street started bringing on like real questionable people to be like the guest on the street.
Yes.
If you will. And you've got Billy Porter out there wearing a dress and high heels. And it's like, what is going on here for my four-year-old? And just listen, honestly, just listen to NPR for, I do listen to it. I like to listen to it. Because I learn a lot. I learn a lot of things that I agree with and a lot of things I disagree with. And so that's great. But I have no problem saying this is valuable to me. Let me pitch in some money. But when something is that highly concentrated on one side of the spectrum, government should not be funding any media, period. Everybody wants to criticize China owning all of the media. And so we all think that's bad. Why are we like, but it's okay if it's us? Because that's culture. That is, it's highbrow academia, public radio for smarties. No one should be paying for that.
Smarties.
Especially when it's putting out, they are always arguing that it's all about the kids. The kids' content is not for kids. My 10-year-old doesn't need to think that they can have they, them pronouns. And they do all of a sudden these podcasts that were reliably kid-friendly.
About learning about numbers and letters.
Yeah. They now are talking about trans rights, and the kids are identifying as non-binary on them. And they're discussing issues that are just, like, not appropriate for children, or just even introducing topics that my kid... It all goes together. It's the same stuff we're discussing about the books in schools, and it all is linked, and it's all serving a specific narrative, and the government should not be funding any of it.
And it's not just that. It's this narrative, too, that they're trying to push, that this is an attack of the administration on free speech, because, of course, that's
not. You have free speech. You have speech.
Yeah. Right. This feeds into the image of him being a totalitarian or a fascist.
Yeah. No, if anything, he's wanting to say, hands off, I don't want anything to do with any of this. And you have free speech. And if people like your free speech, then they'll pay for your free speech. So there it is.
The next step that's going to be happening is that NPR and PBS is going to be filing a suit against the administration.
The president issued this order for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which oversees you both, to cut off funding. Are you both filing lawsuits? And on what basis can you challenge this?
We're looking at whatever options are available to us. I think it's a little preliminary for us to be able to speak to the specific strategies that we might take.
Is that the same for PBS?
Yeah, we're obviously looking. And I would just say the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is a funding mechanism, but they actually don't oversee PBS or NPR. We're independent organizations.
Important point to make. But the threat of cutting off funding, whether it was in Congress or the president saying he's doing it now.
Right. Their angle, though, even though their narrative is going to be like free speech, they're trying to oppress us and the children's programming. It's more of an issue of the fact that the money that is allocated to PBS and NBC is via legislation. It is legislative. So the question will come up on whether or not the administration can just be like, no money for you. So we will see what pans out here. I just think it's hilarious that this is, I don't know, it's just like the victim status of it is just wild to me.
Again, it's propaganda. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And that's all this is. They're going to play the whole, like, this is, you're taking Mr. Rogers away from kids and Sesame Street away from, listen, Mr. Rogers wouldn't be down with this.
Rogers did an entire, he did a whole show on how, like, boys are boys and girls are girls.
Yeah,
and
he wouldn't like the direction that it's headed. So don't co-opt.
Did you like Mr. Rogers when you were growing up?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I found him creepy.
Well,
and I'm like
didn't.
One of the, I'm like a per, I'm just, again, I haven't been trusting like, people from day one. Okay.
You were born skeptical. No, like, I have fond memories because my girls loved a couple of the episodes. They loved, and it's so sweet. They loved the graham cracker episode where they went to a graham cracker factory and watched how graham crackers were made and packaged in a little wax packaging and put in the box. They loved the crayon episode where crayons are made.
I haven't,
like, they just have a lot of really sweet memories. I remember watching the crayon episode over and over and over again with the girls. So we have fond memories.
I'm just saying, like, you know, it's just very on brand. I was like, what is with this soft-spoken dude?
What's with this nice man being nice to kids? Weird.
With the sweater and the slipper. I was watching Fraggle Rock. That's what I was.
Yeah. Okay. This is very. Yep. This everything makes sense. Yep. That tracks.
I loved Fraggle Rock. Okay. So, speaking of, there's no transition from Fraggle Rock to one of the big stories that broke last week, which actually caught much of the media by surprise, was that Walz was out as national security advisor. And instead, he has been nominated for UN ambassador. I have so many thoughts on this, okay?
I just don't have tons of thoughts on it.
Let me share. Okay, so
tell me your thoughts. Maybe I'll have thoughts after that, but I just don't.
So first of all, it all happened in a very interesting manner. Mark Halperin, of course, this breaks right when Amanda and I have just finished recording. Okay, so like I finished recording. Mark Halperin breaks that rumor is that Walz is out as national security advisor. Okay, so give you a quick background. Mike Walz was serving as a representative for Florida. Okay, he was in a safe seat, and which was one of the reasons I think he was pulled, because the administration believed we can pull him, and if they have a special election, we're not going to lose it as a Republican seat. Okay.
Yeah.
He's national security advisor. He's also former military, I think Army Beret, everything like that. He was the one that added Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic to the Signal chat.
Signal
right?
chat. So basically starting SignalGate.
Yeah. He essentially kicked off
short,
SignalGate. If you guys want the context of all that, we have episodes about that. Just search SignalGate. Okay. So the report is that since then, he wasn't doing great. And that when that happened, Trump started asking around, how is Mike doing as national security advisor? How is he working with everyone? Now, the report is that he wasn't doing great. It wasn't just SignalGate, but just in general, like, he wasn't vibing with the team.
Well, they made, like, there was a lot of, and again, we never know who to believe when it comes to this kind of stuff in the media, but there were rumors that he wasn't getting along with Susie Wiles.
Yes.
The chief of staff. He wasn't getting along great with Marco Rubio. And so, I don't ever know. They're always saying somebody's fighting. They love that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
You never know exactly what's what, but then this happens, so maybe there was something to that.
And it's not only that, but when Mark Halperin reported that Walz is going to be out, he also provided more context. And he's like, look, it's looking to me, and this is Mark speaking, that there was a move to push him out at the time that this happened because of
after SignalGate?
No, like when he broke the story that he was going to be out. Somebody came to me to tell me that this was going to happen. And I was immediately able to confirm this within 30 minutes, which to him, that to me is a sign that there was a coordinated effort or agreement.
This has not just happened yesterday. This has been.
That Walz needs to be out. And then also at the same time, the New York Post, the speculation is that Steve Witkoff, which is the Middle East envoy, which has basically become chief negotiator, and Steve Miller and Rick Grinnell and I think Gorka were being considered to take his place, Walz's place.
I heard about Rick Grenell quite a bit.
Yeah, which I think, honestly, out of all the choices that I've heard so far, I think he would be best.
Well, he's in the first administration. He's a Trump loyalist.
Yeah.
He has like, a lot of experience.
He's competent. He's. I think he would probably be the best choice. I think he'd be better than Witkoff, yeah. And I think he'd be better than Steve Miller. But the New York Post put out this like scathing kind of like critique of Witkoff. So Mark Halpern was kind of like presenting this as this was like a coordinated effort to get Walz out, but to make sure that Witkoff would not be chosen as national security advisor. So that was his speculation of how the entire thing was going. So then Walz gets instead nominated as UN ambassador. And I thought that was interesting, to say the least, because we have to go back on if I were... We're not afraid, or at least like we're not afraid here to say when the administration does good things and when the administration does bad things, or when Trump does good things or bad things. But a lot of people like won't realize like what this means. So UN ambassador requires confirmation,
a Senate confirmation. So he's gonna have to go through that entire thing after Signalgate.
Exactly.
So do you feel like they set him up to fail?
Oh, because, I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make it through. What are they gonna be like? Fine, whatever. We'll just let you through because you've already been embarrassed.
That's my thing. Like, I don't understand the strategy here. Now, I get that Trump is a very like faithful like friend. Do you know what I mean? And he's very forgiving. And so I don't think it's weird that he's like out as national security advisor, but then gets offered this other job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is that it requires Senate confirmation. And then shortly after this happens, you have J.D. Vance. He sits down and does an interview with Fox News. And to me, does the wildest spin. Like,
yeah.
Vance is very capable, and he does this wild
spin.
He decided to go with the
this is an upgrade.
Sure. But I want to start with the breaking news.
Yeah.
Why was Mike Walz let go?
So he wasn't let go. He is being made ambassador to the United Nations, which, of course, is a Senate-confirmed position. I think you can make a good argument that it's a promotion. But we brought Mike on to do some serious reforms of the National Security Council. He has done that. I like Mike. I think he's a great guy. He's got the trust of both me and the president. But we also thought that he'd make a better UN ambassador as we get beyond this stage of the reforms that we've made to the National Security Council. You saw the president announce that Marco Rubio is going to step in as interim leader of the National Security Council. So I think the media wants to frame this as a firing. Donald Trump has fired a lot of people. He doesn't give them Senate-confirmed appointments afterwards. What he thinks is that Mike Walz is going to better serve the administration, most importantly, the American people in that role, and I happen to agree with him.
But
this was very political. This was very, very, very political.
Now,
in my
also,
opinion.
Let me give you guys some background on why this is just wild to me. So when Trump first comes into office, of course, he has to choose his cabinet, right? So he's choosing his people. He pulls Mike Walz from his Florida representative seat. And then he also pulls Elise Stefanik from a seat in New York. Okay.
Yeah.
And pulls her to be UN ambassador. And by the way, Elise Stefanik also had some leadership position within the House. Okay.
Yep.
So she pulls all of that. She's like, yes, I will do as my president requests of me to do my service. Her confirmation got dragged out.
For a long time.
She sat through it. She went through the questions. They slow rolled it. To me, it was becoming kind of clear that it wasn't just like typically like the Democrats trying to slow roll a confirmation. I don't see why Democrats would be slow rolling to the extent that it happened with Stefanik for UN ambassador. Like, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. So to me, it says that I think the administration started to get nervous about the narrow majority in the House. And so they started to slow roll Stefanik's confirmation for UN ambassador to kind of see what was going to happen.
Yeah, where the chips fell.
Exactly. Yeah. Before they were like, okay, so Trump ends up pulling her nomination. So now you have pulled her nomination. She's lost her leadership positions. She goes back to her seat. So she's still representative.
Yeah.
But to me, it's smelling like she was not happy about it.
I don't think so. It was kind of like, it's not an embarrassment, but it was definitely such a calculated move to where you could almost feel used. Or yeah. You definitely would feel used. Oh, okay, I guess. And then you just end up right back where you were.
You end up right back where you were. And then they end up nominating Mike Wolf.
This guy who put the editor of the Atlantic on a signal call. Like, it's just...
It's kind of wild to me.
I'd be a little ticked off if I was Elise. Oh, come on, guys. Or unless she knows something we don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. Now, there's also speculation that she might be running for governor against Hochul up in New York, which I think would be very interesting.
Is it Hochul? Isn't it Hochul? It's Hochul. Oh, Sadie. You did it again. Mario Rubio. Hochul.
You weren't here last week.
Add it to the list.
You weren't here last week when I said chicken and hard place. Like, what the heck does that mean?
Oh, we need a t-shirt. We need a chicken and a hard place.
Somebody already made a sticker. I think I'm going to have to make
My takeaway from this entire thing is that Rubio is now been added.
That was the other thing.
He has like 17 jobs now. That poor guy. He's doing everything.
Is now interim national security advisor.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. He is, I guess he heads up like the national art, like whatever the archivist. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, what is the other one? The USAID.
He's doing everything. He is the hardest working man in Washington, D.C.
The amount of memes that came out after that was announced were glorious. Okay.
Now I thought, I posted on Instagram. Tony Kinnett from the Daily Signal did a video like from Full House.
Yes.
Where... It's like the intro, but it's just Marco Rubio the whole time being like, hi. And then it had him like as the Supreme Court Justice and then maybe the new Pope. Like, why not just add on a couple more jobs? I swear, I used to think that Trump was the hardest working man in D.C., but I think it's Rubio at this
point. Right now? And yeah. I will say it's clear to me. It says a lot about the confidence that the president has in Rubio.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, at some point, a man has limits. Like, he needs to sleep sometimes.
Oh my gosh. And they were, I mean, it was, to me, I laughed, but the whole, like, of course they have the one Latino, like, doing all the jobs.
Yeah, that's what a couple followers who are Latino said it to me. And they're like, of course that Trump would ask him to do everything. I laughed. But I will bring this up. This is another unrelated type of thing. You know how they always show like the pictures of the presidents upon taking office and then when they're departing office and how they aged like 50 years?
Yeah.
It's just a fact. It just happens. This job ages you. It's a lot of work. But I feel like, and this could just be maybe bad lighting or some bad pictures that I haven't seen, I feel like this is happening currently to the current administration, not to Trump. He somehow is looking better than ever. But
everybody else, because they can't keep up with him.
Everybody else is looking old. Pete Hegseth started and everybody's like, ooh, who's that? He's cute. And then I saw a picture of him like this weekend. I'm like, he got more gray. His forehead's more wrinkly. He's tired. He has not slept. And then Marco, I saw him in a cabinet meeting or on the couch in the Oval or something. And he just was kind of like, I mean,
they're tired.
They're tired. Poor Linda McMahon at the last cabinet meeting. Like, she started out and her hair was fluffy and she just looked, they all look exhausted because they are. They're all working their tails off. But I swear, after this 4 years, we need before and afters of the entire cabinet.
Of the entire
cabinet. And that could tell an entire story.
To kind of wrap this up, I just wanted to provide the entire background because there is a lot of narrative right now coming from the media of like the chaos in the security team. And I think the media has overblown it, but I don't think it's like non-existent. And I think especially considering that, to me, it seems like there was a breaking point with Walz maybe because the fact that he was reassigned and they didn't have an immediate replacement is also kind of telling. Because my thought would be, first of all, I think the reason he got kept on as long as he did was that the president didn't want to give a win to Goldberg and to the Atlantic, obviously. But also, I would have thought that they were kind of like waiting until they found a replacement. And clearly something happened to where they didn't even wait until there was a replacement.
Yeah.
And so now that position is sitting
open. It feels weird. It does feel weird to me. And he could be doing it purely for strategic reasons and have absolutely no feelings about Mike Walz at all. and think of him as expendable. But there is a part of me that's, it's nice that Trump's trying to find something else for him to do. He really could just be like, you're out.
Yeah.
Like he was in the first administration. And I think it points a little bit to Trump's loyalty to people. If they're loyal to him, or if they've worked hard for him, or he just thinks they're a good guy, he's not going to throw someone out on their butt necessarily. I think he does have some sort of concern, and it might just be for optics, so he doesn't look like he made a bad pick. I don't know, but he to find him another position.
No, I mean, this is a guy, he's not necessarily, I mean, he hasn't fired anyone, but his whole image is supposed to be about someone who can fire people if they need to be fired. And he always points out how Biden never fired anybody. I don't know. We will see. But that seat is sitting open. Marco Rubio has a fourth job now.
Yes. Let's see what happens this week. Maybe he'll find another one.
So what I'm glad is that for now, Signalgate is over.
In the past.
In the past.
I mean, it's going to get brought up again in the confirmation hearing. So we'll see. Maybe we'll find out more things.
And that is probably my biggest concern. And I think it's really interesting is how once he goes through confirmation, is that that's going to be, and it's not going to be just Signalgate that's going to get hashed up, but they're going to try and dig into.
They're going to try and expose like that there's tons of chaos within the White House administration and cabinet.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is something very important, breaking news. Something that everybody's concerned about. And it is the AI-generated images that have been becoming a regular appearance on the official White House, not just the Trump account, but the official White House account. And over the weekend, there has been like a trend ever since the Pope passed away, and they're about to start the conclave, I think, here either today or tomorrow. I know it's coming up this week. A lot of people are using AI to create Pope images. I've seen Biden as Pope. I've seen Barack Obama's Pope. I've seen a bunch of people generated as Pope. Now, Trump was also generated as Pope. And then he went and he posted it. He posted it on his account. He did not post it on the White House account.
The White House posted it on their account.
They
Instagram did and on Twitter. And then rapid response.
Okay.
Yep. The White House. Yes.
There was a lot of reaction to this. And then also at the same time, I think for May 4th.
The next day.
That May the 4th be with you. There was also an AI generated. Rachel's already shaking her head. There is also an AI generated image of Trump all muscled out holding a lightsaber saying may the fourth be with you with some wild caption of like lunatic liberals, but may the fourth be with you. And so there's been a lot of discussion about this has kind of become a thing with we remember that we had the whole like Mar-a-Gaza AI generated video, and there's a lot of mixed reactions to sharing these images. I will say for me personally, I see specifically these two. Honestly, I'm also not as upset about things. So specifically about the Pope, let me talk about the Pope first. I didn't like it. And I didn't like it not necessarily because it was Trump as the Pope, because it wasn't Trump that made the image. Clearly, Trump found the image because I saw that image going around way before they posted it. This was an image that was generated by somebody. The account or Trump thought it was funny. He reposted it. I don't think it was intended as like an insult or anything like that to Catholics. But I don't think that a U.S. president should be posting an image like that of themselves as another leader, because whether or not you want the Pope is a state leader of the Vatican, which is its own little country, in addition to being a religious leader. So you have two things there. You have a religious leader, you have a state leader. You're putting yourself in an image as the Pope, which also makes it seem like, I don't know, you have some kind of religious authority over the population or something like that. Like the optics of it is just not good. And I don't think it was wise for the White House to be publishing that, even if it was a joke, because I get it. I'm not offended by it. of course, I'm not a Catholic. I'm a former Catholic, but it's just not something that I don't find it offensive. I just don't think it's, I think it's stupid and I don't think it's wise. I know you had a lot of thoughts on it specifically.
Yeah, I had a gut reaction when I saw it. And I think the problem I'm seeing is a lot of people are dismissing people's objection to it as stupid or curmudgeonly is the word I like to use. They're dismissing it as, oh, he doesn't really want to be Pope. Nobody actually thinks that Trump was like, I want to be Pope. No, that's not why people have a problem with it. And also, I hear from people who are defending it and saying, it's not a big deal. Brush it off. No big deal. That Catholics had no problem with it. And I posted about it over the weekend. I was like, please stop. And I had tons of Catholics who were like, yeah, don't like that. Hate it. Offended. Really?
Well, it's not going to be.
Craw. Don't like it at all.
Yeah. So not every Catholic's going to like it. Not every Catholic's going to be offended by it. But to me, it's just more about like the general overall optics of it because
I have a problem with it. The same reason I have a problem with a lot of the stuff that this administration does optic wise, the words they use, the things that they say, the tweets that they send out, it all goes back to what people will make fun of me for. But the professionalism, I think, is more important than people want to give it credit for. And also, I heard from a lot of people when I expressed my disdain for stuff like this, will say, oh, but you're okay with what Biden did when he did this. He was not serious either. And I'm like, exactly. You don't say because they did it, now I can do it. And because it's not as bad as what they did, then you can give me a free pass. But I see a lot of conservatives doing that.
Like,
I think really what it is that Trump as the Pope, we all know he doesn't want to be Pope. And there are lots of AI.
Did you see him yesterday when he was?
Yes, I did. The Sith, like he's dressed like a WrestleMania. Like,
what? No,
bodybuilder.
No. I'm not. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about like when he was signing or he was announcing that the draft was going to be in D.C.
Oh, and someone asked him.
Yeah, someone asked him about it, and he actually made a joke. He's like, "I don't want to be Pope. I'm married.
Yeah,
and like I have a. I don't think my wife would be too happy about it, and I wouldn't be too happy
well,
about
he
it either."
Said that he showed Melania the picture and she kind of thought it was cute or laughed at it, whatever.
Yeah,
it's less about me being offended that he imitated that they posted it in the. I think it's problematic, obviously, the actual image. But I think what it is we're getting really used to as a culture because we dismiss so many things with Trump because this is, quote, his personality or, oh, it's Trump. We've started totally being fine with really kind of like throwaway culture, cheap. Like it's just, it's beneath us. Like this kind of stuff is not, I know, again, that's some of the allure of Trump and why people like him because he is a normal person in a lot of ways that we feel like we can identify with. But when we don't take anything seriously, because we're like, it's Trump, Trump's Trump, boys will be boys. Nah. When you start doing that over and over and over again, you just desensitize yourself to all manner of things. And everything kind of becomes disposable.
Like, and I think that's fair.
And it's more about and really I think that the idea of something being professional and needing to be professional for professionalism's sake, like a respect for the office where you just don't do certain things. And I don't think that that's bad. It's the same reason why it hits us so weird when someone like John Fetterman walks onto Congress floor in shorts. Nobody can express why he shouldn't be doing that, but we all know he shouldn't be doing that. And why? Because there's rules. There's things that we have always carried on doing. There's a certain level of respect we have for the office or for what people are doing. And the same thing matters. And I could have seen, if it was just Trump who maybe posted it to Truth Social, I still would have been irritated. Like, what are
it's
you doing?
Putting it on
like,
the White don't. House.
But the White House, there are people that it should be like, no, we're not going to do that because we understand you're the president and we understand you say things a lot, but we're not going. This is the office of the president. This is the White House. This is a historical institution where there should be some sort of observance.
I get what you're saying, but let me also posit an opposite view.
Yes.
Which is, I don't like the Mar-a-Lago AI video. I didn't like the Pope thing specifically because those have policy and internet, like foreign policy
wrapped around them.
So I think those were very unwise.
Yeah, and another reason not to do them.
Yeah, and I don't
millions
think...
Millions of reasons.
They should have been... I don't think they should have been done. Now, in relation to... I think I don't have a problem with this sort of thing if it is done with some constraint and it being, like, strategically used. I think it would be fine. Because it kind of pulls down this barrier of like... relationship between the public and the president, and it makes mm-hmm. the person more relatable. And so that's one of and which is one of the things that I think Trump has in his benefit, that there mm-hmm. is a large contingent of the U.S. population that
who feels very connected to him,
very connected, yes. and he feels him relatable.
Yes. The net positive, really.
Yeah, the AI generated image that he created that I thought was absolutely ridiculous, but I found it funny, was May the 4th one where he's all muscled out with the lightsaber, and the caption could have been improved upon, but in general that is just a cultural reference of him. It's I mean, I probably would have said the same thing if he had posted it's gonna be May for May 1st with I don't
Justin
know
Justin Timberlake's face
exactly because
him is Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, like that would have been funny. It would have been relatable. It kind of like lowers the unapproachability that for a long time the president had. And
but didn't you feel like that unapproachability?
No, I think yes. Good? But the thing is that the culture changes, and I'm not opposed to that. Whether you like it or not, we have become more of a casual culture. It is why we are wearing leggings and not corsets. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know that is an extreme example, but that is part of it. My issue with the administration, Trump specifically, is that he doesn't have a whole lot of discipline in relation to it. Another right. example that I thought was really cool that a lot of people aren't even going to make this connection was that last week, the White House did a lo-fi live stream of Trump. It's a little cartoon animated Trump like signing executive orders, and on the screen was scrolling like all the accomplishments he's made in the last mm-hmm. 100 years, and it was to a long stream
100 days, but it does feel like 100
days. It does feel like 100 years. That was a slip. But and then it was playing on a loop for 24 hours the lo-fi music that is also mm-hmm. a cultural reference specifically for Gen Z, where there are lo-fi live streams that go on YouTube, and I actually listen to them as like study music or when I'm researching or reading. And so that is another thing that I think that was actually a really good example of how mm-hmm. they're trying to create like a cultural connection with the people. The problem is to me is when you start bringing in like elements that go outside of a connection with US citizens. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Portraying yourself as the Pope or creating or sharing an AI generated video of Mar-a-Gaza or whatever. Yeah. Like that to me is definitely problematic. And my wish would be that the administration would be a lot more disciplined in that. But whether you like it or not, one of the, like as much as, for example, Barack Obama irritated me, one of the things that propelled him to the popularity that he got to was that he was
use of social media.
Exactly. And how
but he was disciplined in how he
exactly.
did it. That's the problem. And
yes,
and it's not just Trump who's not disciplined. They're,
it's the whole administration.
It's people that are embedded that are doing these social media posts inside the administration. And I mean, what I think is funny and the memes and the reels I'm showing my husband are one thing. But I'm not posting every one of those, even on my own social media feed. And this is what I do for a living.
Yeah, like, I'm very disciplined.
If you're
in
the
it too.
President of the United States of America, no, the Pope just died. You literally were just at his funeral. Come on. Okay. And the administration should know better. But I mean, clearly they don't. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an old granny. I am an old granny. But I think that there is something lost when you lose or you dismiss a certain respect for the office and for the institution.
No, and I agree with you.
And I get we're casual, but we're really diving in deep lately. Okay. We're getting real comfortable. And I think
look,
that there
I was
needs
more
to be
upset.
Caution around that.
Honestly, I was more upset with the fact that his lightsaber was red. Okay.
It was the wrong color. Yeah.
It's
a lot
the wrong
of people,
color.
I'm like, that's what you're really focusing on. Okay. See, again, casual culture. We know our movie references, but we have no problem with the president dressing up like the Pope who just died a week ago. Okay.
I do have a problem with that.
I know you do. I know you do. But writ large, I was told I needed to take a chill pill and calm down. and look, come up if it was off in a vacuum, of my high horse.
Honestly, if that had happened like in some kind of vacuum, like the Pope hadn't just died, or him and the Pope have a really great relationship, or I don't know, like some other, probably a little bit more tolerance for it.
Yes, of course. But the fact is that it didn't. No. He's dead. And they're literally picking a new Pope right now. And you're going to throw that up and put like caption iconic? No.
I will say his reaction to it yesterday in the
Oval was kind of
was hilarious. So
it was. He was like, no, I don't want to be Pope. No. Because that's a, you have to take a vow of chastity in life.
He's like,
okay, let's do earmarks.
Not happening. Okay. Do tell. Earmarks.
All right. So earmarks. Here we go. DHS to pay migrants to self-deport. I'm sure some of you have heard this story. We might cover it a little bit more in episodes to come. But the story is that the Department of Homeland Security is offering undocumented migrants $1,000 plus travel costs to voluntarily leave the United States using the CBP home app. Their argument for doing this is that they say it's cost effective. It's a dignified alternative to forced deportation, and claiming that over 5,000 people have already self-deported. Of course, you're going to hear progressives, critics call it a coercive tactic to push migrants out while dangling vague promises of future legal reentry. Listen, I don't know why anyone would be arguing against
it's really this. Interesting because I had a bunch of people that would be like, no. And I think they were most upset about like
because the money
of
paid. But do you know how much it costs?
That's
to
my
do
thing.
This like for the fine. I say great. I want to know. I actually probably today will try and look up how much if they did say $1,000 plus travel costs. So say the net on it was what, like $3,000?
So if you're trying to make a cost comparison, it costs about $17,000 to find and deport
then.
Someone because they have to
find
them.
No, do this program. $1,000 plus $2,000 in plane tickets and maybe a couple hundred bucks for some food.
The estimate is on the high end, it would be $5,000 to get someone deported. And that includes that $1,000
bonus. So then you're saving over 10 grand.
Yeah. Basically. And they're using the CBP One app to track them too. So it's like they don't get that $1,000 until they leave the country.
Okay.
Correct.
Great. I think I'm on board with this.
Tell us what you think. I think we should
cover this a little bit more. I'm kind of curious.
Well, I just...
I know. Give us some time. We are two very tired old ladies. Okay. Next up, Trump's 100% tariff on foreign movies. I covered this on the Dawn Dispatch. Me and Mercedes kind of think this is lame, but President Trump announced 100% tariff on foreign-made films to boost Hollywood, claiming the U.S. movie industry is, quote, dying, close quote, and overseas production is a, quote, national security threat, close quote. The move has sparked confusion in Hollywood with stocks like Netflix and Disney dropping with the uncertainty. I did say a stat, though, like over the past, I want to say decade, over 40% of film production has moved out of the country.
Yes.
And some of that was for like, I don't know, there was COVID, there was the wildfires in California. It's just there's more exotic locales that people are able to film at. It's expensive here. But still, I'm just like, why are we picking this to
And one of the things, like, this argument of it's a national security threat, because I think he's trying to say, you know,
he's
like,
saying, he said that it's propaganda. I'm like, yeah, that's what movies have always been.
Also, like, if you're really concerned about propaganda, I'm like, frankly, why don't we look at TikTok again? Because TikTok,
that's the whole thing.
The entire tariff war, if you wanted to see a perfect example of like propaganda being fed into the United States, into the brains of young people, go to TikTok for five minutes.
Yes.
Because I go on there
TikTok. That's
all
the
time.
He loves it.
And look, I have an appreciation for it. And my biggest thing is especially how TikTok helps small businesses grow, because it does without a doubt. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, the moment that he announced the tariffs, immediately you saw TikTok being flooded with videos about how to circumvent the tariffs and how to go to China producers.
I don't know. Between this and the next earmark, it feels like it's a lot of we want to shore up America's history and like cultural icons. And
I get that. I appreciate that.
I get it. I think that there's something important about that. But I don't know if this is 100% tariff. I don't know. We'll see.
Really?
Yeah. The next one I was particularly interested in just because it has a historical angle. So I'm sure you heard over the weekend that the reopening of Alcatraz is on the menu. Trump has ordered the reopening, and basically it would have to be completely refurbished. An expansion of Alcatraz, the infamous San Francisco Bay prison, to house America's most ruthless and violent offenders. The former prison was closed in 1963. Now it's a tourist site. Many fourth graders have toured Alcatraz. It's pitched as a symbol of law and order because it was.
I don't know. Look, to me, it's so clearly he even made the reference yesterday because he was asked about it. And he even said, oh, it's something about movies, because at the same time he mentioned the movie tariff.
Yeah.
And it almost seems like to me he had a movie night at the White House.
Yes, and he watched Escape from Alcatraz.
Yes.
With Clint Eastwood.
And then he was like, you know what?
And he's like, done. What happened to that place? What happened?
Let's reopen it. Open that. Oh, I got
to mention it's completely dilapidated. It's really, really run down. And everything has to be physically brought to it.
Both
water and food, and then it would have to be completely redone, obviously. My favorite part about this, and I have no problem with thinking about the idea, Tom Homan was asked last night in an interview, and he's like, well, we need more beds. So, you know, he was basically sure.
I think at its peak, it only housed 300 prisoners.
Yeah, it was not big. And then it had the prison guards and all their families were also living on the same island.
And it was shut down by RFK Jr., by the way.
Not RFK Jr.
Sorry, by RFK, not RFK yes. Jr.'s father.
You mean, yes, okay.
During JFK's administration, specifically because it cost too much to run.
It was very expensive to operate.
Now,
yes.
Obviously, I don't know if we can make it cheaper now that we have some more modern abilities. Maybe a little drone in supplies instead of boating them in or something like that.
I don't know. It's really an interesting thing to think about. And if you're interested in history, like I am, I wrote an article yesterday all about the backstory and the history. It's actually really cool. I made my kids watch a YouTube video about Al Capone yesterday because he was a famous prisoner there. And
to
it's got
more,
a great history.
I think this is more about him wanting to create, like, it's a symbol.
It's
like
all about
it being,
that.
Yeah. Efficient. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm just like, whatever,
We'll see. Okay. And the last earmark, but go read my article. It's fun because I love all the history about it. I'm like, I showed what a menu was like back then, and they ate good. Like, they ate good at Alcatraz. They had a band. Al Capone played the banjo. Okay. So there's a lot of history about Alcatraz that you need to know for your next cocktail party. All right. The last earmark is that Israel plans to hold Gaza. I can almost guarantee we're going to have to talk about this at some point in the near future. Yeah. Israel is reportedly preparing to seize an indefinitely occupied Gaza, with plans escalating after Trump's visit to the region. Prime Minister Netanyahu endorsed Trump's proposal to relocate Palestinians temporarily for Gaza's reconstruction. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah,
I don't want to make comments because I don't know yet.
Yeah, it's definitely something very new that's developing. It's also, I think, in response to Trump kind of like pulling back a little bit and and showing signs of being willing to do some negotiation with Iran, which I have ideas about, but I don't want it because this is a whole can of worms that we can end up in. But that is happening. Another thing that is happening today, which I forgot to mention on the earmarks, is the brand new shiny PM of Canada, Mark.
Will be there.
Carney.
I think it's Carney.
Mark Carney.
Yeah, he's going to be there. He's showing up.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. Hopefully, I mean, we're talking about a Canadian, so I'm not expecting kind of blow up in the White House.
It's going to be a calm argument, but is there going to be an Oval Office altercation? That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, I think it'll be way more polite.
Because you know that that press in there is, oh, I want a soundbite so bad. And they are going to be like, so what do you think about Canada becoming the first 51st state.
And the wild thing is he's gotten elected. So anyone who is not Canadian, by the way, let me give you a quick rundown. So Trudeau steps down as the leader of the Liberal Party. Mark Carney gets literally installed in as the leader of the Liberal Party. He is a globalist. He is a banker. He is well into the system. Okay. Of the world globalist system. Poilievre's numbers start to tank when Trump starts talking about Canada's a 51st state. There's a big debate on whether or not Trump contributed to that or if it was because Poilievre himself started to soften on his conservative positions out of concern of the election and Trump and everything like that. So there's a debate about why he lost. But not only did Poilievre lose, but he lost his seat. So he's basically out of government until another, I don't know, whatever position it is in Canada, has agreed to resign. And it's supposed to be a safe region or a safe Canada situations. But the point is that it's basically like a representative here resigns and he can run for the seat because it's a safe seat, because it's 80% conservative. So that would put him back into possibly his leadership of the Conservative Party. And there's currently a pretty significant move for Alberta to secede from Canada, which would be very interesting because Alberta would cut Canada in half if that would happen. Not in half, literally, but like it would separate Quebec, which is also has a separatist movement from the eastern part of Canada. So just because the Liberals won, which, by the way, they did not win the majority in Parliament. So in order to shape or form a government, they're going to have to negotiate. The parliamentary system is so bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
To create a government with the help of other parties. It should be very interesting, that meeting today, because not only are we having the whole situation in Canada, by the way, a good read, I think, is Rachel had a follower kind of share their perspective of Canada being the 51st state, which I am against. But their perspective was really interesting. It's on her Substack. So,
well, and why Trump may be hinting at it so strongly over and over and over again. There might be a method to his madness. After
so
all.
That is a we'll good, see. It's a very 4-minute short read if you guys want to get a perspective of someone in Canada who is supportive of Canada becoming a 51st state, which I'd be fine with Alberta becoming a 51st state. I don't necessarily want all of Canada as a 51st state.
I don't know.
Keep those things on your radar. We will see what happens and what we come back with on Thursday. Reminder, we have an unfiltered episode coming out this weekend. So if you want to be able to listen to that, which is literally exactly how it sounds, we come up with a topic and we just dump on
it,
share our feelings with it. It's a lot less structured. It's a lot more fun. If you want that bonus content, please consider becoming a paying supporter. The link is in the show notes. You also get access to community and it's just a fun time. So I think that's it for today's episode.
That's it.
So I'm going to go ahead and let you guys go. If this is your first time here, welcome. You found your new favorite podcast. Please hit that follow button so you don't miss the next episode. Leave us a 5-star rating, a comment, and share it with a friend, because that really helps the podcast grow, especially considering that the algorithms, in addition to the media, are trash right now.
Totally.
Big frustration right now. If you want some merch, like some Hold On To Your Pantalones stickers or some I Love Mario t-shirts, click the link in the show notes to get our merch. And that's it. That's all we have for today's episode. We will see you on Thursday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. All right. Bye.
Bye.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.